This is Live Wild's Connection Matters podcast, bringing together heart-centered, nature-connected, curious people who share the inquiry, how can we create a connected and meaningful way of living that brings more health, happiness and growth to our world? My name is Leona Johnson and I am your host. Hello, welcome to Connection Matters podcast. How are you today? I've had a funny day. One of those days where lots of things go wrong, but on the whole, life is good, and I hope yours is too. Today I'm bringing you an episode with another wonderful human, Chris Holland. Chris Holland is, I'll read you his bio. Chris is a leading inspiration in the field of nature connection and environmental education for families and schools in the UK and increasingly worldwide online. He is musical and playful too. He has many things in his teaching bundle, including a degree in environmental science and a natural talent for working with groups of people, telling stories, sharing bushcraft skills, foraging, creating environmental art, and playing the didgeridoo too. He wrote his first book, I Love My World, in 2009, reprinted in full colour in 2020, and has now created absolutely incredible CBD and Nature Connection courses online at www.natureconnection.co.uk. He's also a husband and dad, lives in Devon and loves swimming, surfing and climbing trees barefoot. Chris is founder of wholeland.org.uk. So I've moved in the same circles with Chris for quite a while, and we've been at the same events, but we've never really properly met. But I knew that all of the things that he does, all of the things and the ways that he brings things together with his whole self, being fully alive and embodied with what he brings, I knew that we'd have a great conversation about connection and the situation right now, the times that we're in, and the need more than ever for children and all people actually to connect with nature, but also to connect with that playful side, to connect to storytelling and stories and creating stories and the power that comes with all of that. So it was a really rich conversation. I'm really grateful to Chris for joining me. I'm also grateful at the moment for all the people who are supporting us through our Patreon account. If you don't know about Patreon, it's a way of paying a small amount each month to independent creatives like musicians, artists and podcasters. So for as little as £3 a month, you could support this podcast and that would promote its sustainability and enable us to keep bringing these, I think, are amazing conversations to more people. So yeah, hop over to www.patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast to look at the range of things that you get actually in exchange for your money, because there's lots of amazing freebies and opportunities to enter draws to win things as well. If you haven't subscribed, then do hit that little subscribe button just below, and that means you'll get all of the episodes straight into your device. We're trying to do at least one a week, and usually managing to stick to that, although at the moment it's the summer holidays and it makes things a little bit more challenging to try and get them all out there, but we're getting them. I've got some really lovely episodes lined up actually, so watch this space over the next few weeks. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Chris Holland. Do check out all of his amazing offers there in the show notes below, links to his work, because he's offering a lot of stuff for very cheap and very, definitely very reasonable for what's on offer as well. And this is Chris Holland. Hi, Chris. Welcome to Connection Matters podcast. Thank you for agreeing to speak with me.
Oh, no worries at all. Lovely to speak to you too, Leona. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it's really nice. I've been Well, let's start with gratitude. Let's start with grounding ourselves and checking in. I'm free. I'm happy to go first. I am grateful this morning for the sunshine, for the clouds above me, for the rains that we've had recently. I guess the elements, actually. I've been out in the woods. I've been working with children, which has been a pleasure, actually, after so much time not working with people over lockdown. And we've had the full range of weathers. I must admit, it's been quite kind, but we've definitely had the rain and the showers and the wind and lovely long sunny afternoons as well, where we get to lie down in the meadows. And it's just really great, isn't it, to be able to embrace the outdoors and be out in all weathers and that be okay. So yeah, I'm really, really grateful for that. Yeah, and I think that's what's alive in me right now. How about you?
Yeah, I'm very grateful for the misty rain that we've had this morning. It was really partly it means I don't need to go out and water for the vegetables so much, but it's just really nice going out for a run this morning. So I'm really grateful for legs that work, actually, and a nice bit of countryside to live in, so I can go out and experience the weather and the rain on my skin. It's been awesome. We do have a little stream at the end of our garden as well, and I've been incredibly grateful for that this summer. It's tiny, but there's enough to put a watering can in it as well, so that's been my sort of morning routine, is get up and stretch, water the plants and things. I'm really grateful for local friends and businesses, actually. Yes, today my wife's kind of off on a long journey, and we ran out of engine coolant, and it was like, just pop over to friends of ours who run the garage and blag a little bit of engine coolant before she heads off, and so that can settle her and she can feel confident. Mm-hmm. Driving off to go and see our granddaughter, which is very exciting. So those things, and that's it. That'll do for today.
Thank you. I'll join you in those gratitudes. I really appreciate having local connections and lots of water as well around me, with the rivers and the streams, and I feel very connected to water and that idea of flowing and flowing around. And being in water as much as possible has been what's kept me going, actually, over the last few months. So, I'd definitely connect with
us
that.
Us too, actually.
Yeah. So I wonder if you would be willing to share a little bit about yourself, really. I'll let you tell me what is it that you do in the world, and what is it that makes you feel alive?
Great. I'm dad, husband, so I've got family here, and definitely keeping the roof over the head, over our heads, sort of helps me be alive and gives me a sort of a function and a job. I suppose 25 years ago, I went on a bit of a walkabout. I went off to Australia and went to meet some friends over there. But it was more than just going to meet friends. I wanted to go and woof over there and sort of willing work on organic farms, for those people who don't know about woofing. And I've recently finished a permaculture design course. I'd done an environmental science degree. I liked sports and outdoors, but I hadn't got a bloody clue what I was meant to do with my life. So, and as a little kid, I'd spent a bit of time in Australia too. So I sort of wanted to connect with some of my history and trying to find out what it is that I was meant to do. So when I got back from that journey and where I was doing quite a lot of, I don't know if you know I Ching, which is the sort of Taoist thing where you throw coins and you can make a hexagram, and it's a bit like an oracle, I suppose, but reflective of what's going on in your brain. So I was trying to unmuddle my brain a bit, and I got this answer that was something to do with outdoors, something to do with play, and also something to do with kind of, it seemed like woodwork or survival skills or gamekeeping or, you know, or something. But there wasn't a clear answer at all, as is usually the way with I Ching. And so, and I suppose weirdly enough, you know, 25 years later, I'm doing a mixture of those things. I'm a sort of forest school leader. I think I'm quite playful in the way that I bring environmental education to people, and I love working with parents, you know, and adults as much as I love working with kids as well. So one of my favourite things at the moment has been doing family camps in the summer and the May bank holiday weekends, where multi-generational groups of children, well, children, people come together on a lovely farm here in Devon, and I do a sort of mixture of forest school storytelling, survival skills, environmental arts and craft, and it's on the surface that's what it's about, but on underneath it's about building connection and community and sort of loving relationship to nature and the earth and ourselves. So that's ultimately that's the sort of work that I do, is try and build connection to one's own sense of creativity and you know, one's own creative spirit to the land that you live in and to the people that we're around.
That's lovely. Thank you for sharing that. And I absolutely connect with all of what you said in terms of the desire to want to work in the outdoors and be playful and work with people and on all of those things, because I find myself doing a lot of this, a lot of very similar things.
Yeah, sounds
But
like
that's
it.
great that you came to it from, well, reflecting back, you see that the I Ching sort of, I identified those things all that time ago.
Yeah, and it was giving me no clear answer. And I think, you know, at that age, I was looking, when I say that age, like 25, 26, I was l looking for a traditional job. You know, it's like when you come out of college, or you know, you can go and be a mechanic, or you can go and be a researcher, or you could go and be an academic of some sort, and or you know, a scientist in a lab or something, hairdresser. There's so many different roles in society, and but it wasn't very clear in at that time at all as to what I might be doing. And I think that's because the kind of jobs that you and I do now weren't really around, you know, 25 years ago. It was more left up to kids and families to make their own nature connection time and, you know, connections with each other. So yeah, I think it's a an evolving kind of work.
It is an evolving, it's an, and it's, it is a whole field now, isn't it, really? Nature connection work and forest school particularly, they're very known, aren't they? And that's changed a lot over the last few years.
Yes, I think it has. It's become much more mainstream, and people see that it's definitely got a value these days. And I think people wouldn't sort of flock to summer camps and or certainly send their children to summer days out doing forest school in the ways that they are at the moment, without there being a real need and people understanding that need.
Yeah, there was a time whenever children played outside a lot more, and so they would have had more connection to the outdoors. And then there was a time where, I guess, TV took over and there was a lot more indoor time. And then it's through the dearth of connection experiences and opportunities for the connection that the forest school movement really grew, wasn't it? Because people were realising that actually we need to create more opportunities for children to play in the outdoors, because they don't roam as far as they used to. We don't walk as much as we used to. And yeah, the inherent value of being able to have unstructured time in the outdoors
is absolutely
so powerful.
It is so powerful. And I think, you know, as we're speaking here in August, at this time of year, this is particularly sort of dreamy, wandering, glory, sort of timeless time, as we in between the structure of school or in other sort of regimens. Then, and summer holiday has been that sort of traditional time when people have gone off and explored, had holidays, gone camping, etc. But I think increasingly over the last 20 years, people have also, I think people got more used to sort of caravan sites, campsites, and going to hotels and complexes. And it's the way that humans have been sort of corralled into their holiday experience really means that people just aren't having that free time to connect in an unstructured way with nature, either in their backyards or even when they go on holiday.
Agree. And I love the idea of the family camps. I think a lot of people are looking for that kind of thing where they can go and they're held. There's a structure to it, but actually within that structure, and this, I don't know how you hold your camps, but I'm imagining within that structure, there's just lots of opportunities for exploration and play and interaction and alone time and then together time and all of that. And because that's what community living, I don't know, is it what community, I don't know if it's what community living ever was, but it's when you think of how and what a healthy community could look like, having spaces where people join together and in celebration and connection, and then they have those times apart. That's a really lovely space to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, that's why, as you said, that's pretty much why I sort of structure my family camps in the way that I do, in that if we sort of, in the morning, the early morning, there's sort of free time to stretch, or if you want to go on a sit spot early in the morning, et cetera. Then we have a lazy breakfast, and we have a meeting all together around the hearth at about 9:30, just a sort of quick check-in really every morning. And then we have 2 hours of doingness. Mm-hmm. And then there's basically 3.5 hours then for lunch, do whatever you want, have a siesta, go and explore, play, etc. And then we do another 2 hour session, like from 3:30 to 5:30. Which is, because it's afternoon, it's usually a bit more yin in its feeling. It's definitely more gentle and more arty, I suppose. And then we sort of break, and again, we have food. And the way that I run the camps, people, you know, bring their own food and cook their own food. But we all sort of learn from each other as we're cooking around the fire and near the hearth, etc. Then we'll have a story of the day at the end of that period at about 7:30 or 8 o'clock. I'll do a bit of storytelling of some old stories, etc. And then the little ones can go to bed. And then after that, the bigger ones who like kind of doing night games and stuff, we kind of go off to the woods or go off to the dark places and play about in the night for an hour or so as well.
That's so exciting, yeah. Isn't it? You know, just I've been involved with Forest School Camps, FSC.
Such a great organisation. Yeah.
So that's an organisation, for people who don't know, FSC, that has been running, I guess, I think since the 1930s or 40s. And run by volunteers, and took inspiration, I think, from a lot of traditional cultural ways, but has been running ever since camps all through the year for children, where they get to cook and live together and do various exciting activities, and one of those activities is the night game, and it's legendary and it's so exciting. And can you imagine, you know, being sort of 8 years old and getting taken into the woods and then left there as part of a trail, or, you know, and having to work the way through with friends, or being blindfolded, and, you know, and having it's all very well managed by the supporters, but it's exciting and definitely pushes, you know, children to the edge, but in a safe way. And I think we need that, don't we? We need the opportunity to take risk and feel at our edge, but also know that
we're safe. Yeah, definitely. And through play, that's the best way to do it, isn't it? I think, you know, mammals just learn through play. And when kids, well, all grown-ups get taken to a place of, you know, their fears being able to be turned into their joys by the experience of a game of some sort. You know, like when you're playing chase, and it's usually most fun to be chased, isn't it? But if it was real life, then, you know, being chased by a predator, that would be kind of terrifying. But in it, that's that's when you kind of get the joy of being of practicing your survival skills or whatever it is. And those games in the dark, you know, you might think being taken into the woods and just left there as an 8-year-old is like terrifying. But actually, when you're with a couple of friends, and it is scary, but it's also, if you know that it's a game, and there's people there to look after you if you, you know, if you need to call out, then it's fantastic.
And
yeah, I know that as I get older, then the kids, you know, on the family camps, they do want to stay up a long time.
Yes. Yeah, they do want to push their boundaries, don't they?
And have
those experiences. And I love that exists. I can imagine. And I guess, so are your family camps held around or inspired by the Eight Shields?
Yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Sure. I came upon the Eight Shields work through John Young, and I came upon John Young through having studied for a little while with a guy called Tom Shaw in Sussex, who taught survival skills and wilderness philosophy. And I just immediately resonated with it, because it seemed to me to be this kind of missing link of connection between people and place and the rhythms in nature, that when I'd studied permaculture design course with Patrick Whitefield, I thought that course was just amazing. And I'd studied all the useful things that I'd learned in 3 years of doing an environmental science degree were on that permaculture design course.
But nice.
It was more about land and people, I suppose, whereas Shields' work, which in a way ties people into 8 different directions, which are based upon sort of directions and festivals within the natural year. So when I say festivals, but like cardinal points, like the equinoxes and the points in between the equinoxes and the solstices, but these points that mark the calendar through the year, they all have a sort of certain energy to them. And learning how I could apply that to only to my work as an educator in terms of planning a session that I might be delivering that's an hour long or something, or a whole day long. What I discovered through the Art of Mentoring camps and the Eight Shields work is that you can, you know, run a whole camp sort of based upon this framework. And it's not like a rigid structure, it's more of a it's a guideline, or a guide. It just gives us guidance as to how to structure things that are based upon natural cycles and rhythms. So generally everything works and people relate to it, and they feel relaxed and held because it's done in a in a way that's based upon natural cycles.
Yeah, as you know, I work with the Eight Shields as well, and I've found that using the model applied to any event has really helped me think about all of the ingredients that are needed to help people find optimum conditions for connection. But also,
Yes.
the outcome has been amazing. You know, the simplest things can really change the way someone experiences an event or a moment in time, and yeah, and
What do you
it's
mean?
really
Can you
lovely.
give us an example?
I guess, you know, we've had people who've attended Skillshare events that we've run using the Eight Shields model who've felt after 4 hours that this has been a transformative experience, and they can't really explain it. But I'm putting it down to the fact that we've included and created a container that has enabled people to feel safe in a way that maybe you wouldn't feel safe going to a different kind of training course, or enough to open up and explore your own thoughts and feelings in a way that, you know, connects you to what really matters to you. And that's been my experience. And obviously, it's a work in progress because it's about a way of thinking, isn't it? And a way of being that's different to the dominant culture that we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're totally right there in saying about the safety that people experience through an event being held in a way that sort of using the Eight Shields approach, because when people do feel safe, then they really can relate to each other so much more heartily and from a place of centeredness. And it is, it's a kind of, it's an unseen sort of magic. You don't really know what it is, but and I think that that relates also to the Eight Shieldsy thing. It's like when we talk about the East having a certain quality. Well, it's a sort of unseen somethingness about it. But if you're aware of it and you're bring that into awareness within the way an event is held, then people get to really open up and connect and feel like they're part of a community and connected to all our relations.
Yeah, and that the full human being is welcome. Our all of our difficult feelings and the need to express and feel, you know, maybe sadness or grief, but also our playfulness as adults is really encouraged. And I love that. One of the first times I think I came across you actually was when you were storytelling at the Art of Mentoring in Devon in, was it 2017? And I loved that, you know, that all around there were the children who were gathered in the front or sat down on the ground, and then there was all the adults around in the circle around and about, and everybody was just as engrossed as anybody else, you know. And I think, you know, I grew up thinking that stories were for kids, you know, and actually, it's only in recent years that I've come to understand how powerful and how important storytelling is. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
I think I agree with you in that the importance of storytelling as an activity being a vital part of the way that we are human. People learn so well from stories on so many different levels, and a sort of a good story, as in an effective story, I think it plugs into people on at many different places within their life experience. And so, like the stories that sort of are told around the campfire and have been told for around the campfire or in the hut or the cave for thousands of years. Those kind of stories touch people, whatever age they are, and people relate and pick up wisdom from the stories in different ways, and that sort of is the beauty of storytelling. I decided I wanted to be a storyteller in sort of about 97, I suppose, because Yeah, when I came back from Australia, I ended up spending some time with a friend of mine who actually built stone circles. He's actually passed on now, a guy called Ivan Macbeth. So some people might have been to Glastonbury Festival, and at Glastonbury Festival there's the Swan Stone Circle there on that site, and he built that stone circle and several others around the world. So I wanted to be a sort of an apprentice to him for a little while, and one of the things that he was doing sweat lodges and fire walks at a Druid summer camp, and so I went along to go and help. And this was the first time, one of the first times I'd come upon storytellers, around a campfire, and there were all these old stories. And I went back to the summer camp the next year and had plucked up enough courage to start telling some stories. But using my didgeridoo as a sort of prop. So I would play a bit of didgeridoo, but or tell a bit of the story, play some didgeridoo, etc. Because I realised that with a story, you can tell an environmental message, or a story that a message of wonder and connection, without having to sort of ram it down anyone's throat. You're just telling a story, and people will pick up from it as they do. A story that I first told around the campfire to the Druid Circle was an Aboriginal story about how the termites that hollowed out a didgeridoo were, when the first time a piece of wood was played like a didgeridoo, it came out, or they came out of the end and went up into the sky and became the Milky Way. And so that's how those stars came to be there. And I love stories like that, that have that sort of wonder about them. But again, I think it's a skill that people are losing. Certainly up until recently, I think there's been a loss through the digital age, or the television age anyway, of individual storytelling, because people have got more interested in the lives of others, through sitcoms, etc. And but that's storytelling in itself, and brilliant storytelling a lot of the time. So people have lost their own storyteller's voice, and this is going to sound like a plug, but it's and it is partly, but it's also because I feel really passionately about encouraging people to become better storytellers, or at least to access their own storyteller's voice. So one of the things that I've been doing sort of during lockdown has been actively promoting that course online, and it's been really good to see so many more people kind of sort of taking up on this ancient art of storytelling, because they want to use it in their work, as teachers in schools, or like us, we work with children and families outside. So we it's a story can be such a fantastic way to set up the activity for a whole day, and tell a story, and then let's do an activity about this, and then the play evolves from that story. And whether you're a child going off and playing outside and making things and pretending to be different characters, or if you're an adult and you want to sort of start digging into this story, and what does it mean, and what does it mean to me, and people start talking about their experiences or how it relates to them, and that all builds connection between people and places. And yeah, so I see storytelling as just a vital magic, really.
And it's so true, isn't it, that people have lost the confidence to actually come up with their own stories and share their own stories. And I certainly have felt like that. I have told stories. I've pushed myself, and I've try to remember stories that I've read so that I can then retell them in a way that brings life to it in a circle, and something about doing it around the fire adds that little bit of magic. But yeah, I saw your course and was very excited about it. So yeah, I'll definitely be looking at that, because it feels like the more that we can bring words to our creative imaginative thoughts, that the more creative we'll become, we'll be able to be, and actually, you know, adults and children respond so well to being taken off into that imaginal world, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. And it is a place of dreams, and where all things are possible. And in order for us to find solutions at the moment to our current problems, we're not going to get them by thinking in the same way that we have done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the people that come up with, you know, wonderful ideas to solve problems, they enter into that sort of dreamlike space of storytelling and magic, or infinite possibility. And the more that we can take people on little journeys into that space, I think the more that we are able to imagine in it. I don't know, better is not necessarily the right word, but imagine a different future where, you know, all life and beings matter, mm-hmm. would be marvelous.
Mm-hmm. And I've been exploring that recently, because I feel like, I don't know if this is one of those woolly things that you can find yourself saying sometimes, but I do believe that through creating a vision, through creating a story ourselves, we can step into that reality to an extent, you know, and you know, that's slightly different to telling a story, to just telling a story about a certain thing, you know, animals and skies and all of those things. But it all adds to the same muscle in our brain, in our mind, that allows us to imagine a way of being and then creating it, and then moving into, in terms of the future that we want to move into now, given the times that we're in, and the real crisis of our world in terms of, you know, environmental, climate, social, political, you know, in every area at the moment, we're struggling, aren't we, as humanity? So we definitely need to be telling stories, the new stories and the stories that we want to hear and we want to see.
Yeah, I think we do. And telling them to ourselves too, to give us a sense of belief.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I've been finding from the podcast. I've been lucky enough to have lots of lovely conversations over the last months. And so I feel relatively hopeful and excited, and I get passionate about things. And at the same time, I'm, you know, I'm hearing and seeing people feeling very, and it's not wrong to feel this, but feeling very downhearted and worried and anxious and stressed, because the messages that we're seeing and that we're getting from the media are, you know, very bleak and tricky, and actually, you know, whilst it's important to be in touch with that version of reality, we do need to be hearing the positive alternatives, don't we? And hearing the stories of what is going on and what is exciting about these times.
Yeah, definitely. We really need to have positive stories about the place. What came up for me just then as you were speaking was, I was thinking about, you know, in a way, how I feel like I've stepped into a story of my own creation, I suppose, or, you know, of my stepping into that sort of dreaming during lockdown, because 5 or 6 years ago, I came upon this idea to create a storytelling for outdoor learning course, and that this might be a wonderful way to sort of help people learn to become better storytellers in themselves and find their storyteller's voice, but also to get children outside and much more connected in nature through the power of stories and the activities that you can do off the back of that. And so I sort of dreamt it up as an online course, and I thought, well, this might actually help me as an environmental educator by going online. So I've learned loads and loads over the last 5 or 6 years, sort of putting that all together. And it has been a supportive part of my income, and it would have said it eventually it might be able to be a pension or a something to support me when I'm a bit older. But then when lockdown happened, and suddenly, you know, at my normal job of doing didgeridoo workshops around the country and forest school locally here in Devon, everything just stopped. I think, like a lot of people, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? But also, oh, I'm quite excited about this because it's nature, or it seemed to be nature giving us this opportunity to try to be more environmentally friendly and reduce our emissions from travel and really think what's going to sustain us. And so, amazingly, I'm so grateful that my courses and also re-promoting my book that I wrote 10 years ago has helped support me now. That it's like they've been, especially the book actually, it's been like a tree that a long time maturing, and it's provided a trickle income for many years, and then in the last 2 months it's basically supported me. It's paid all my rent and stuff.
Nice.
And so it feels like at last it's come to fruit.
That's very
Yeah.
exciting. I got your book as a gift, about 6 or 7 years ago. After I did my forest school training, and I love it.
Cool.
But yeah, so I'm really happy that it's getting out there and that people are finding it, because it's just full of playful and creative and very simple things that you can do in the outdoors. Do you want to tell us about the inspiration behind that and how you brought it
Yeah.
together?
Yeah, sure. So when I was studying with Tom Shorcon and studying the survival skills, Rainier was beginning to be sort of popular. And I had a couple of his books, and I thought, fantastic, these are really good, wonderful skills. And I thought that everyone should know these basic skills because it really helps bring us into connection with the earth that supports us and then helps us feel at home and confident through knowing, basic things like how to make string, how to make a fire, how to make a shelter that keeps you dry, in all weathers and things like that. So yeah, that I knew that that would help people feel at home on planet Earth. And then one of the other books that I was inspired by was a guy called Joseph Cornell, who wrote a book called Sharing Nature with Children. And again, that was a sort of ecological, ecology, biological networks, sort of games and activities and sensory games and activities. But I thought what I needed to do was create a book that was a combination of the two. And so, yeah, I Love My World was a mixture of some creative creation stories to help us get into that sort of dreaming that humans have been here a pretty long time and that we're all connected to nature. We're part of the land. And that, in order to be here and feel safe and take care of the place that takes care of us, we need to know some of these basic skills, which are the survival skills. But there's also the sort of artistic skills within it and the sort of social skills. And so I think I Love My World is a starter, or it's a good mixture of all of those qualities, human qualities. And then, so yes, I sort of made that as a paper, self-published that as a paperback. And rather than going to a publisher, I am just so grateful that I didn't. Because right now, anyway, because if I had gone to a publisher many years ago, I was quite stubborn about it. My wife was like, you need to take this to a publisher, keep telling me. And I've just been sort of stubborn and not really explored that. But now, having the rights to my own creativity or my own creation in terms of a book, okay, yeah, I'm very grateful for the activities and skills, many of which are just humans have done for a long time, so I can't claim ownership to them at all. But I've sort of put it in a package, some of the ideas of mine, I suppose, in the book. But where do ideas come from anyway?
Yeah, nice.
They come from nature somewhere. So yeah, I was just really pleased during lockdown to be able to get some money income from the book, and I put it straight back into making a colour version of it, which is now out, and it's now at last the book that I wanted it to be 11 years ago when I wrote it. I'm so pleased that I can print it in colour and it looks beautiful, because I always wanted it to, and I wasn't really like, doing the best I could with what I've got, and that sort of permaculture principle, really. Originally, I had to print it in black and white because it was unecological and it was financially unviable to print it in colour. But now things have moved on, and we can in colour.
And that's at a time whenever people are really looking for resources and I guess craving and reaching out for that wisdom that hasn't really been passed down through the generations. So we need to find it elsewhere in books like yours that pull together a lot of the really juicy connection-based wisdom that will help us do our connection work in a really healthy and holistic way.
Yeah, and playful as well. I keep coming back to that one. I want to have health and et cetera, and but we people learn best through play. I think I wish I could find it again. There was this quote on Facebook that somebody had put out there within one of the Forest School Network groups, saying that it can be something like 1,000 repetitions, will help people learn something if you're doing it in a structured sit down way, whereas it can take sort of between 10 and 20 if you're learning something through a game or play, that you develop the new skill through play so much more quickly.
And it is, and what you were saying before about how much we learn in nature, I think often people think of outdoor learning as the place you go to do maybe canoeing or climbing, or you do a specific thing, and it's like a separate subject of its own. Whereas for me, and I imagine you feel the same, what we learn when we're doing and what we And what we the space we create when we're doing forest school isn't about just it's not like another subject like maths or English. It's everything. It encompasses how to live in connection, and through that, when we're able to connect to ourselves and have that space and connect to nature and connect to each other, we learn all of the other things as well. We learn how to speak to each other and listen well, and we, we get drawn towards science and biology, and because we see things growing alive, living and changing over the seasons, and then we want to divide the space up, and we can create ways of dealing with mathematical thinking without even knowing that it's maths, because we're you go in that half, and let's create these sections and or whatever. I don't know, measuring. There's just so it just all happens naturally. And I we one of the things that I'm involved with is a little home education hub. And because of lockdown, we had to the tutors took all of their lessons outdoors, the Spanish tutors and the art, and they were very
Oh,
nervous
excellent.
about it at first, because obviously it's not what they were trained to do. And whilst being, very nature connected themselves, they weren't prepared for all of the things that you have to think about when you're working in the outdoors. But over time, all of them have just said, actually, there's so much scope here for teaching that what they're teaching, but also bringing all of the other things that they love. And it was really exciting, because it felt like, oh, if we could just get more teachers to be able to feel comfortable in the outdoors, then we would have a much more healthy learning system
Yeah,
that
I
really
agree.
worked where children met children where they need to be met, really.
So what do you think would or what do you think helped those teachers feel confident enough to get to that place of realization, the realization of the potential of outdoor learning?
I think they were basically forced into having to do it, because it was like they really wanted it to we wanted to be able to see the children and work with them. And so the experience, having the experience, and then seeing how the children responded, and then themselves finding how rich and connected they felt after their sessions compared to how they felt after running their hour-long session or whatever it was in the classroom. And and I think all of those things, you know, it has to come from within, doesn't it? We have to have our own, we can't take anybody else deeper than our own connection. We have to start there. So as as teachers, as as educators, we really need to nurture and have our own practices that support our, us in connecting with nature. And when we do that, then that naturally filters out. And that's my experience, I think.
I'm just sort of, I'm wondering because I've been asked to write an article for the company, or as a something called Tapestry. I don't know if you ever come upon Tapestry in schools. It's a software that enables teachers to feed into some kind of online hub where the parents get a chance to see what their early years children have been doing in school, and say there's notes and photos and all this kind of stuff. And they again are saying that they're trying to encourage their teachers to kind of do more outdoor learning at the moment. And in a way, it's a little bit difficult because school grounds are becoming even more of a premium as people are invited to go outside more, but they've got to stay in their own sort of bubbles. And so they have certain parts of the school ground where they've got even less outdoor area now. And part of the early years curriculum to do with understanding our no longer has an obligation to do any science outdoors. And so they were asking me, you know, what can you do to help teachers feel, you know, more confident to run sessions that encourage curiosity, you know, outside. And I was coming back to the, I think almost just what you said there is about how developing a sense of safety for people to be, to feel like it's okay to go outside, for them to have the experience and to see the benefits of being outside, and that that can be just an incredible opening to the brain and the mind of children, because they, you know, they are naturally curious and they will naturally want to explore and discover, because that's what we're doing. You know, that's what our brains need. And it's vital for that discovery, because how else are we going to understand our world unless we, you know, get outside in it?
It's so I have done some teacher training, taking one of the times we took 60 teachers from a school in Old Trafford in Manchester, in groups of 20, so three groups of 20 over a day. So they were just outside for 2 hours, and it was really interesting. We did it in a park in Manchester, in the sort of rough bit that doesn't get mowed, and the teachers all came out looking like, "What are you going to make us do? And why do we have to be here?" Kind of that sort of, "Oh, we've got loads of marking we could be doing." And then by the end of the just a 2 hour session, which incorporated a little bit of play, a little bit of thinking about how we played when we were children and how that's changed now, and then exploring risk and benefits, everybody just left, and we did a little sort of fire circle, and everybody sort of had said their intentions of how they would like to incorporate nature at the end of our 2 hour session, how they'd like to incorporate it into their future work. And everybody, you know, even if one or two of those intentions come off, it was so exciting to be with those teachers, because it really is just a case of feeling so constrained by the systems that they're in, and the amount of things that they have to do, that going outside seems such a big thing. But having been outside just for 2 hours and reflecting on their own, the benefits that they received from nature, they were inspired. You know, they went away with, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to hire a coach and take all the parents who've never seen the sea to the sea, I'm going to do, you know, and it was, and it did make me feel that if only we could reach more teachers and schools, because it's forest school leaders are needed, because I know so many forest school leaders are so well trained and they're so good at what they do, and you know, the academic learning is needed at a certain level, so it's a separate thing. But to be able to encourage and enable current and existing teacher subject teachers to also use the outdoors and be in the outdoors is just vital, I think, to how we're going to heal and move forward, especially now after COVID and the reintegration of children who won't have been around large groups for like six or seven months by September time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, again, this is a sort of a risk of just saying, oh, look what I'm doing, isn't it marvellous? but you know, one of the things I'm really excited about, and the possibility of at the moment anyway, is something called, what I call natural musicians. And these are, it's basically doing music outdoors, and the way that that can help bring a bit of harmony in our connection to place and with our own, sort of our own voices. Because, you know, partly my thinking about this is that unless we have confident voices, then people aren't going to speak up, and we don't all want to just be sheep. And the another part of it is, because somebody like Prince Charles, I know some people think he's a bit wacko, but I really respect, all that he's been doing. And he really believes that we need a little bit more harmony in our relationship with people in place. And so, these activities, these natural musicians activities, are pretty much doing all of the musical curriculum, which gets pushed down and down and down within the priorities within schools. But there's loads of research out there that says that if you're doing music within school, it doesn't even have to be outdoors, but within school, if you're doing singing and rhythm, percussion together as groups, it brings this sort of group feeling together, of togetherness, and it's and it really helps with learning and academic achievement in school. So the natural musicians activities, I did a workshop for the Devon Music Hub. They were doing an online conference in June, because we couldn't do the conference outside. We couldn't meet up physically, so we did it online, and it was so good to just do a bunch of these activities in the forest school area, at the school that I work in. I was just on my own, but sort of delivering it as a CPD thing for the teachers and the kids. And you can do music outdoors. Mm-hmm. And again, the way that the activities, if we're being inspired by the structure and the forms and the names of the plants that are around us, and the feelings that you have in different places within, for example, a forest school area, then you can bring all of that experience and feeling to the music that you're making as a group, and it it really connects people to place and to each other, and brings a bit more harmony. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about being able to do that when when school's open back up again.
Yes, absolutely. That sounds absolutely spot on. And very excited about that, and would love to hear how that goes. And I hope you do get it into more schools, and that more schools take it up, because it really does create the kind of wholeness that we all need, and that if we felt, we would learn more efficiently everything, wouldn't we? And that sense of place, and the sense of that there's something about for anybody, especially children, if they know the plants around them, if they feel confident in the outdoors, they have a real sense of who they are. And that if you know that you have a relationship with nature, you feel like you belong somewhere. And no matter what else goes on in life, it brings and creates resilience and a sense of belonging and meaningfulness. And that's what we all want for all children and all beings, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Belonging. I'm just feeling it, I suppose, that sense of belonging. That's what people, so many people just crave. And I know that some of the troubled children that I work with, yeah, that sense, they do get a sense of not necessarily ownership, but they feel like they can be themselves a little bit more outdoors when they're when they feel safe, and they know a little bit more about the place and the, yeah, the plants and the trees, and yeah, it really does bring that sense of belonging and connection. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for all of the work that you're doing. It's so inspiring and exciting, and it
Oh,
makes
thank
me
you.
have hope for the world. I am wondering if you would like to share how people can get hold of you, look at your stuff, join courses, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, thanks for the opportunity, Leona, and also likewise, you know, thanks for the podcast and for doing all the work that you're doing too. So we can pat ourselves on the back, I think, a little bit, and everyone can. But if people want to get hold of me or sort of find out more, then there's one or two main portals, I suppose. Then there's my websites, which one's called natureconnection.co.uk, and that's where I host my online courses. In storytelling, natural musicians courses there. There's some which are specifically for home educating families as well, which is sort of a storytelling course, which I call Nest. And then there's, yeah, and you can buy my book there as well. Then I've got a website which is called Whole Land, which is a pun on my word, on my name, Holland. So, but being holistic education or whole body learning about the land, that's where you can get hold of me for more sort of team building and, you know, workshops and camps, etc. And then look up Natural Musicians, that's got a website. The Didgeridoo Man has got a website. On Facebook, there's a couple of groups. There's a page which is Chris Holland's Storytelling, Nature Connection, and Outdoor Learning. And there's another group which is more interactive than that. The page one, I sort of put up reviews and activities and posts about my courses and stuff. Whereas the group is more of an interactive group again, storytelling, nature connection, outdoor learning, where we lots of people share activities and stories and stuff to do with outdoor learning, which is it's quite a nice resource for people there as well.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I will share all of those links in the show notes. So for people who are interested, hopefully they can connect with you there. Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, what a lovely time to have a, yeah, great conversation, Leona. Brilliant.
Yeah, really
Thank you very much
nice.
for inviting me along.
Pleasure. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope it inspires you to follow your path of deep connection. I love sharing this information, and I'll always share any relevant links in my show notes. If you like the show, please consider supporting it at patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast. This is where you'll find bonus episodes, giveaways, and behind the scenes content from me, as well as having my huge heartfelt thanks for any support you can give me. It really helps with the viability of the show. You can get most of what will be on offer for as little as £3 a month. Please also don't forget to subscribe on whatever app you use by clicking that little subscribe button below. That way you'll get all the upcoming episodes straight into your device. And review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. It's so helpful. The music that opens and closes the show is actually my very own dad, and you can hear more of his music at soundcloud.com/visionray.